Ready for argument in the case of Colorado Department of Human Services versus Maggard, and we're ready to hear from the petitioner.
Good afternoon. And first of all, let me say I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is...
Please, I don't know if it's possible for you to speak up a little bit, can you?
I don't try, does that help?
Okay, you can also raise the podium. There's a like a toggle switch on the top of the podium. That might help. Maybe not working. There we go. Yeah, please, go ahead.
My name is Joel Hockey, and I'm the Attorney General's Office. I represent the Department of Human Services, and also present is Ms. Chris Gomez. She's also of the Attorney General's Office, and she represents the Personnel Board. And the Personnel Board has no real personal interest in the outcome of this case as it pertains to Ms. Maggard's appeal. But as Board's counsel, Ms. Gomez, and we'll explain the Personnel Board's process and the problems that have been caused the Personnel Board by the Court of Appeals decision. What I want to do is make clear to the court that there is also, besides the effect that the Court of Appeals decision has on the Personnel Board, it also has a huge impact on all state agencies. Case before the Personnel Board, the Department of Human Services presented proofs to the Court of Appeals that contained detailed cites to the record and pointed out substantial evidence that supports the agency decision, and also explained the legal basis and that there was a reasonable basis for the appointing authority's decision to terminate Ms. Maggard. However, the Court of Appeals reversed the Personnel Board essentially because the Court of Appeals wanted more explanation than the Board gave, which was that the Board refrained from enforcing the appointing authority because there were not three votes of the Board to do so. Now, the problem is, from the Department of Human Services' point of view, reversing the Personnel Board had the effect of reversing the decision of the appointing authority, and even though DHS had no control one way or another over what reasoning the Personnel Board gave or didn't give the Court of Appeals. And so the end result is that the Court of Appeals did not review the record that was before it, didn't review the record to see if there was substantial evidence in the record, and essentially, the proceeding of the Court of Appeals, therefore, bypassed the Department of Human Services' opportunity for appellate review. We just ended up losing without our case actually even being reviewed by the court. And the Supreme Court cases are pretty clear that the Court of Appeals has an obligation to review the record before it as to whether there is substantial evidence in the record. As a matter of fact, the Anderson case, which I cited in my brief, was very similar to this case where the Supreme Court noted that the district court had not made factual findings, but the Court of Appeals should have reviewed the record because the district court had merely done a review of the record, and the record was just as valuable to the Court of Appeals as it had been valuable to the district court.
So it's your view that when this situation occurs where the Personnel Board has a tie vote, in effect, 2-2 vote, and doesn't have enough votes to overturn the decision, that then the reviewing court, the Court of Appeals, should look to the sufficiency of the evidence under the proper standard in front of the in support of the action by the agency, final agency.
The Court of Appeals does have an obligation to look at the record, yes.
And it just, what happens to the ALJ part of the decision? They just skip over that?
ALJ is not really a final decision until and if it's either through these processes and scale appeals or the appellate gamut.
But I'm just talking about, what's the test you would like us to apply in this type of situation where the personnel board ties up 2-2?
Well, in that case, the personnel board has kind of had the statutory authority to reverse the appointment authority, and if there's an appeal, then it goes to the Court of Appeals. And but see, in this case, the actual reasons given by the board, as far as that goes, though, besides the fact that there's the statute that doesn't allow the first class, there's three votes of the board also, the first time it met, adopted the administrative law judge's findings, so that actually was the findings the board has to adopt it. So that was available for the Court of Appeals to review to see if, in fact, there was substantial evidence in the record on a reasonable basis in law for the decision.
I don't know that we can reach that, because that's not the decision in front of us, is it? The 2-2 decision is the one that came. Wasn't it remanded by the Court of Appeals? There's been two appeals, right?
Yes, but I think the question before this court is whether or not the Court of Appeals acted arbitrarily and capriciously in reversing the personnel board and ordering the board to reinstate Ms. Dragon's appointment. So I think it's actually, in order to get to that determination, we have to look at the entire avenue, the entire road that the case followed from the beginning, rather than looking at the legislation.
Okay, but what is it that you would have us, I know you object to what the Court of Appeals did with this case, but what would you have them do in this kind of case? What should it should do?
I would say that the Supreme Court would be in a position to review the record to see if there's substantial evidence, and I cite extensively in my brief to the Supreme Court as well exactly where the evidence can be found. In the alternative to that, I would ask that it be remanded to the Court of Appeals to perform that same function.
Okay, so in like the rule you would like to have in the next case is if the personnel board ties up 2-2, that then at that point the Court of Appeals should review the entire record and see if the record is sufficient to support the agency termination?
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay.
Yes. And unless there's more questions.
I do have a question, which is, it does seem to me that it's that second decision of the Court of Appeals that is at issue before us here. Consistent with your resolution, however, of which I think applies to that case, it seems to me that in doing that, if we agreed with you, it also has the implication, although we're not addressing the first decision of the Court of Appeals, by implication it would seem to say that the Court of Appeals should have done that to commence with, that is, review the record to see if it supported the decision of the board.
Yes, I also agree with that this court should have first what the Court of Appeals did insofar as expecting my expectations from the board, but yes, exactly. I think there's two prongs to the thing in order for it to come right.
But in your view, no explanation is required. It might be helpful in terms of for the reviewing court to be able to focus on the record, but in the absence of any explanation, the function is the same. Review the record to see if it supports the result.
Yes. It is a reason for the board to give that we don't have three votes. And I think, obviously, a litigant or appeals, the Court of Appeals would proceed at their own risk if they didn't put in that specifically in the record for the court to look at what the evidence is. But that's not the situation in that case.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Chris Gomez for the State Board of Personnel. it's the board's position that the Court of Appeals' direction to the board to reinstate the ALJ's decision is a relief that the board cannot grant by law, because it would require the board to act in excess of its statutory authority. 2450-1036 is the standard of review that the board must apply to any agency action that it is going to, if it's going to reverse and modify that action. In doing so, it must employ the standard, the statutory procedures set forth in 2450-1036, which states that the board must have three votes making a finding that the agency acted arbitrary or capricious or contrary to rule of law. The board made two votes upon reviewing the record and the briefs before it, and cannot gather the three requisite votes to overturn the appointing authority's decision in this matter. And as such, the appointing authority's decision in this case, termination, stands as an by operation of law. If this court affirms the Court of Appeals decision, it is essentially eviscerating that standard of review that the board must employ before reversing or modifying an appointing authority's decision.
But what do you think should happen to the, in this circumstance, to the ALJ's decision? It's just doesn't matter for our purposes, and you skip that and go right back to whether the record evidence is sufficient to support the Human Services Department's decision?
Well, I would say the ALJ's decision, I mean, it's important in the fact that it is a fact finder for the board. It acts on behalf of the board and hearing the matter before it. And its ultimate conclusions are just an initial decision that can and may be modified by the board or by any petition of the party. So it should be treated as the fact finder. The ALJ's decision should be treated as the party that gathers the record for review. And so that is essential. That's a central part for the board to review this matter to determine whether the appointing authority acted arbitrarily or capriciously in this matter.
So the Court of Appeals, we should tell the Court of Appeals in the future, what it should do is look at the ALJ findings and see if those are supported, and that would be the end of the inquiry. I'm trying to figure out what do you want the I know you're unhappy with what the Court of Appeals did, but what do you want them to do in the future?
We want the Court of Appeals to ensure that the process employed by the State Personnel Board, from the point when the employee has the opportunity to appeal the adverse employment decision through the point that is granted a hearing, through the point that it is given the opportunity to present evidence, to appeal that initial decision as rendered and found by the ALJ, to ensure that the board has reviewed that record before it makes a final decision as to whether the appointing authority's decision would be is arbitrary or capricious. So we would ask that the court look at that, the record as a whole, not only just the record for the basis of the employment action, but also whether the procedures were employed to ensure that the agency did not act arbitrarily, capriciously, and that whatever decision, an employment decision, was rendered by the agency, that it did have good cause. That is the whole point of the personnel system and the hearing process.
Yes, but I guess I'm just trying to get a little more simplified here. Do you want the Court of Appeals, is the Court of Appeals bound by what the ALJ did and therefore would not look beyond that, or would the Court of Appeals look also to whatever the Human Services Department
I would say
did?
That the Court of Appeals is bound by the administrative law judge's decision as adopted by the board. The board does adopt the ALJ's decision in its final action, and whether it's modified or affirmed or reversed, those findings are found in the final board action, so that the Court of Appeals should review the ALJ's decision as modified or as adopted by the board.
So in this particular case, what does that mean?
That means that the Court of Appeals should have reviewed the action, the ALJ decision as modified or adopted by the board initially. And it did, actually. And it did, and part of the issue here is that the findings of facts were never at issue. The facts of the case were never at issue. It was the ultimate conclusion of law as to whether the board, the appointing authority acted arbitrarily, capriciously, and determining that termination was the proper remedy for them or proper discipline before them. And the board came to a 2-1 vote regarding that initially. So the decision to discipline was never at issue. It was the ultimate conclusion as to whether termination was in fact supported by the record. That decision was never overturned by the board. The board never reversed it or never modified it because the record supported that the agency did not act arbitrarily and capriciously. And that is the record that was before the Court of Appeals, and that is the record that the Court of Appeals should have reviewed.
I'm sorry to chew up all your time. Just one more question. But didn't the ALJ recommend a different penalty rather than termination, some lesser penalty?
It did.
Yeah. At least in the second one. I don't know.
Well, it did actually. The ALJ
it's the same one.
Yes. Okay. It stayed throughout. But yes, it did. But it's our position that, the ALJ's decision is not a final binding action for the board. It is a matter for, it is another decision. There's another factor for the board to consider as part of the record when rendering its final action.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court, my name is Fonda Hall, and I represent the respondent in the stock case, Norma Jean Maggard. First, I'd like to address some of the issues which were raised in the opening statement. The ALJ determined and made factual findings that are supported by the record that termination was too severe for a sanction when you apply the standard of just cause to the employee, to Ms. Maggard. The board, when it looked at the same set of facts, terminated the employee, and there was no explanation or reason provided as to why it, on the same set of facts, facts that are supported by the record, came to a different conclusion. And this is the reason in the first case, which cert was not applied for. The Court of Appeals decided we need some explanation for the change in the sanction. The facts in the case that were set forth in the Court of Appeals decisions in both cases are accurate and reflect in detail the decisions of in detail the facts of the case. However, there's two really important facts here. I apologize for my voice. I woke with a sore throat this morning. However, there are two very important facts here. First, it's undisputed that the board did not provide any reasoning for its determination to overturn the decision of the ALJ. And secondly, it's undisputed the board was under order by the Court of Appeals to state what its reasoning if it again decided to terminate the employee. The board failed to follow the order of the court and made it impossible to determine on review whether there was a reasonable basis in law for the court's decision.
Well, and the personnel board couldn't act to reverse the termination unless it had three votes.
That's correct.
And at least at the end, they seemed to have to tie up 2-2. Why isn't that sort of, that's it? What else can they say? We didn't have the votes to reverse it.
Well, there were two votes to reverse the decision. There had to be a rationale or reason for that vote. And whether the vote was by operation of law or by a 2-2 vote, there had to be some rationale or basis for the vote to terminate.
Why isn't it enough just to say the statute says we have to have a vote of 3 to overturn the decision to terminate, so therefore the decision to terminate stands?
Because the law requires that there be a reasonable basis in the in law for its decision, and it's impossible without some kind of reference back to the facts or some reference to other cases on why it wasn't too severe a sanction as to why it didn't, it decided to terminate.
But isn't it the statute dispositive? statute doesn't allow the personnel board to reverse in those, the sanction.
That's correct.
And it, I mean, what else can they do?
Well, they can, when they vote, they can express reasons for, to uphold the decision of the ALJ or to reverse. And should, by operation of law, the reversal take place, then there are reasons on the record to determine why there was the reversal, even though it was by operation of law because there weren't enough, there weren't three votes. I don't think that you can evade the order of the Court of Appeals or evade the very established rule of law that there be a reasonable basis in law for the decision. I think when that happens, then the court looks to the, what the Court of Appeals did here, it looked to the decision of the ALJ, so the ALJ's decision is supported by the record, and therefore the ALJ's decision stands. There's nothing to, for the, there's nothing available for the court to come to a different conclusion because there's no rational basis, there's no reasoning as to why there was the termination. So I guess if to answer, I think, some of your earlier questions, what the court should do with no reason is given or to statutes, the court then looks at the factual findings of the ALJ and determines if that conclusion was supported by the record as a whole.
I think the suggestion made by the Attorney General's office was that should look at the findings of Human Services and see if their findings are supported. But would you, is that, do you think that's the right way?
No,
for it to be handled?
I think that's prohibited by the Badaghi case that says the court is not to comb the record and become, in essence, an ALJ and findings of fact and determinations of law. That totally eradicates the role of the ALJ, which is to weigh the evidence and make decisions of credibility in a de novo hearing.
So you would say that the Court of Appeals should look to the ALJ's findings and then do what? And in this case, as we know, the ALJ came up with a recommendation that the discipline was too severe and it should not be termination. What is the, does, what is the, what's the Court of Appeals supposed to do with that, that conclusion?
Then, reverse the board and reinstate the decision of the ALJ.
But on what basis, given the statute?
On the basis that the factual findings and the conclusions of law were supported by the record, while termination was not supported by the record.
Doesn't that evade the statute requiring a vote of at least three members of the personnel board to reverse decision of the agency?
I don't think it evades the statute. It means the statute was in effect that there were not three votes to reverse the decision. That doesn't mean that it's evading the statute. It just means by operation of law, the termination of the appointing authority stands. Therefore, you go to the findings of fact and the de novo hearing, which is constitutionally from the hearing that's found in the Constitution for the protection of the employee. And what you do is, I would suggest, is make sure that in no way that de novo hearing is diffused or desecrated. I believe.
Remind me, I mean, I don't have that constitutional provision in front of me. The constitutional provision refers to the authority of administrative hearing officers?
It refers to the authority of the administrative hearing officer. The administrative law judge stems from the authority of the board. And the Constitution, it's Article 12, Section 13. I'm not sure which subsection states that the employee is entitled to findings as to why it was terminated, and then it is entitled to a hearing before the board. The board happened to bifurcate the decision-making into by delegating, which is really common, to the ALJ, the fact-finding portion of its decision.
Now, the employment authority made findings or not? In connection with it, so okay.
There was no issue that the pre-termination decision was in any way violated the rights of the employee. It was simply that it violated the rights and that it terminated her when there wasn't the factual basis for it, but there's no procedural or due process violation of the pre-termination hearing.
And most of your argument is that this case here completely evades any kind of review with the outcome of just proving the decision of the employer, right?
Well, the argument here is that you can't, number one, there was, when you apply the standard of arbitrary and capricious, there's no evidence that the board looked at the record. There's a requirement that the board look at the record and make its determination to make its
decision. I'm assuming the board's decision is a nullity. It didn't make a decision, right?
Right.
That's the problem.
By not making a decision.
The only entity that made a decision was the employer, right? By terminating the employee, right?
Well, no. The board made a decision by not having sufficient, by operation of law, it terminated the employee. If you adopt the rationale that in any circumstances where there's a decision by the ALJ that the sanction was so too severe and it's based on the facts, which it was here, the Court of Appeal looked at that, and then take it to the board and there aren't sufficient votes to reverse the termination, therefore the appointing authority stands and is not subject to any, the termination that becomes not subject to any review, that violates the rights of the employee to a review of the.
I think I understand, but okay. In the normal circumstance, the hearing officer's recommendation is a recommendation. It's not binding on the board.
Right.
So, you know, a case becomes before us and we're tied 3-3. We offer no opinion on the merits. It's a standoff, and the decision below is affirmed. And I guess the ultimate question here is that what this statute provides in this circumstance? Why should we validate a hearing officer's decision that was not final? Did not become final.
Because the hearing officer's decision was the decision that was based on the record of as a whole. You can't read that.
Well, I understand, but it's a recommended decision, right?
Right, but you can't read that and look at the fact that she found mitigating circumstances, that the appointing authority was not credible, and reach the conclusion that termination was a valid sanction. You apply lawfully, and it states that when in exercising the board's discretion, did it come to the same conclusion that a reasonable and honest person considering it in a fair manner would come to that same conclusion? And here the answer is no. And when the answer is no, that's
we become the fact finder then. Basically, we're evaluating the evidence.
No, the fact finder is the ALJ.
Okay, but you're turning that fact finder into a final decision maker that isn't set up in this scheme, apparently.
Right, but the statutes provide that any decision that is reached on the employee has a right of appeal to the Court of Appeals and then to the Supreme Court. And if you accept that in these cases where all the board members wasn't there, you can't review it because there's only an ALJ decision, then you've totally undercut the right of the employee. That's why we think that this is an important case. The law requires that there be a reasonable basis in the law, as I stated before. In this case, the ALJ found that witnesses by the agency were not credible and that the appointing authority acted contrary to law when he did not consider the mitigating circumstances. Therefore, under the facts, as found by the ALJ, the termination was too severe. In closing, we believe this is a significant case. It implicates the constitutional rights of the state employee. It addresses whether a board can override or ignore the orders of a court. It is our position that both the rights of the employee and the authority of the court are protected by applying the well-established definition of arbitrary and capricious or contrary to rule of law. Thank you.
After the court, I want to thank all counsel for your arguments. Case will stand.